And they're going to snap it, and it's Trey Burton who throws caught. Foles, touchdown.
3H after 4H. Back up. Pickford stops it. Eric Dyer places the ball on the spot. And England win on penalties. History in itself for this new team, new territory. The last eight of the World Cup, and who knows where beyond there.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Day Art Debate podcast. It's Christmas, so it's time to throw a new tradition into the mix, the Dugout Debate Moments of the Year. The clues in the name will run through all the great moments that we've loved about the sporting year, giving us all them lovely feels, and we'll just reminisce for a little while. Chris, as you had so many, why don't you go first?
So one of my ones was the Cleveland Browns managing to finally win a game in 2018. On September the 20th, on a Thursday night football in front of all of the US and all those NFL fans around the world, they finally managed to beat the New York Jets 21-17 at home, having not won for 635 days and 19 games, which went all the way back to, let me find out when it was. It was Christmas Eve 2016. When they beat Los Angeles Chargers 2017. And obviously they went an entire season, the season before, not winning a game. And a little bit ironically, after they won this game, their coach got sacked, having gone through an entirely winless season before that. He still got sacked, having won a game the next season. But they then brought in a new coach, and they're actually in the playoff hunt this season. And Baker Mayfield then... star quarterback has made a massive difference to them and has actually given them a chance. So that was definitely one of my moments of the year.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You know, when you hear those sort of stats and like somebody comes up with, in that time, a billion children have been born,
yeah.
And Brexit has happened, and so has Trump, and all that sort of thing. You're like, oh wow, yeah.
It's been long.
Yeah, it's specialist, isn't it? They were so bad. Because the only way I actually kept up to date with American football was occasionally I'd tune into the red zone and fall asleep. Or more likely, I watched the highlights on BBC with Mark Chapman, OC, and Jason Bell. And literally, like, every episode, they'd be like, let's not talk about the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, they lost again.
Yeah, and for it's kind of weird with American football that, you know, it's all very cyclical, unlike soccer. Mm. So at one point, presumably, the Cleveland Browns are actually quite good.
Well, this is the thing. They've had first round picks for so many years, but they've always seems to have picked the wrong people. So actually, when it's come to it, they've should have had some of the best players coming through from the college game, but they've somehow managed to have a losing run, as you say, when the league is completely set up to avoid one team being terrible and being at the bottom all the time. The Cleveland Browns have still managed to defy that and be at the bottom all of the time.
I mean, they have the same sort of thing with the Cavs as well, don't they? Obviously, they are picking better players on this in the draft, Cleveland, but again, they're never up there, and they've only been up there because of LeBron James before, so it's just Cleveland as a whole just doesn't seem to
have
any luck.
That's why there was so much fuss about Cleveland finally winning a title, because it had been so long that their sports teams had been terrible, and I can't remember how long it had been before they last won a title in any of the three major sports teams. It was something like that, and the city just went mental.
I presume there was talk of some sort of Cleveland curse.
Yes, there was.
Very American.
All of that.
Like, this is me saying off the back of the fact that I pretty much was 100% sure there was, but had never heard it before. So it shows you that the Americans are predictable.
Of course.
We love you. Please listen. We need some more listeners. Anyway, so yeah, that's a nice one. Should I do Foles? I'll do Foles. Just as it goes on the back of American football, then we can stop talking about it for a bit. So this is the Super Bowl of 2018, where obviously it was Philadelphia versus New England Patriots, and it was 15-12 approaching the end of the first half. That was to Philadelphia. It was fourth and goal with about 20 seconds left, I think, and it was a bit chaotic, but then you just see Nick Foles, there's number 9, running free and receives a touchdown pass from the tight end Trey Burton, And I was like, what? Because this is one of the first times I've stayed up and probably watched a Super Bowl. And it's the first time I've done it by myself. And it's pretty difficult. And, you know, you sort of go in and out of consciousness at points. I was like, did I just see that? Is that actually what just happened? You received your first ever touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. And you were you weren't even considered like to be playing about 3 months earlier when when Carson Wentz was doing so well. So to have gone from that to doing that chicanery in that on that stage was pretty, it's pretty funny, pretty good, nice little moment, and successful.
Yeah,
it worked.
It worked. They went on to win it, which was disappointing for me being a Patriots fan. So that one hurt, but you still got to hold your hands up and be like, well, they've thought of an incredible play where their quarterback's in a situation to score a touchdown like that. So fair play.
Yeah.
This seems to happen quite a lot with Patriots, didn't it? It just happened recently with against Miami, where they just scored an unbelievable touchdown as well.
Yeah, that was like watching rugby, wasn't it?
It was very
passing
rugby
the ball
like,
back to try and get over the line.
Yeah, so that made Foles the first quarterback to throw and receive touchdown passes in a Super Bowl, which is
impressive,
expected. Yeah. But obviously that makes sense because who the hell does that in that kind of stage? But it's like trying a Panenka penalty, I guess, but doing it with your head.
Yeah, you've got to have some serious cojones.
Yeah, it's very backwards. And a very strong neck as well. right, Jack, you do one.
All right. So one of my top moments of the year, the first one that I'll do, was the Deontay Wilder-Tyson Fury fight, or most notably Tyson Fury's comeback to world boxing at the top level. So as most people know, Tyson Fury had been out boxing for about 2 years for mental health problems and drug problems, which he's very, very vocal about, which I think is brilliant. And he'd come back early on in the year and had two other fights that he'd had, which were against less well-known fighters, but obviously he was trying to get him back into sport, back into boxing, and he had come back quite comfortably. But he was kind of building up for this comeback fight, which he was trying to find a top fighter for, and obviously he got it with Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder is obviously the biggest boxer in America at the moment, both in stature and in name. That's still boxing. Obviously you've got Floyd Mayweather as well, but he is retired. Deontay Wilder is known as this knockout machine, and obviously if you had seen the fight, he obviously still does knock down people, but what I think what was even more special about it was with all the problems that Tyson Fury had had, he lost 10 stone getting back into shape for this fight, which is crazy, but got into a ring with one of the world champions to fight 12 rounds. He got knocked down twice, most notably the second one, which was in the 12th round, where a lot of people think he was pretty much knocked out, but somehow got back to his feet within 10 seconds. And what was even more special about it was that he got back to his feet and he still competed, and he arguably won the latter part of that round, in my opinion. So obviously the fight ended in a draw, which could go both ways, obviously, with Deontay Wilder knocking Tyson Fury down twice. But in my opinion, Tyson Fury probably was leading on points as well. So it could have gone either way, and the referees saw that way. But I thought it was probably the fight of the year, or one of them, for two of the biggest boxers in the world. And it was one of the most enjoyable fights to watch. And obviously with Tyson Fury going through everything that he had gone through in the last 2 years, I think it was a great thing for people in general that have had problems, that they keep to themselves, that even the biggest, the strongest athlete in world sport has problems, and you can still get through it and talk about it and come out the other side even stronger.
I thought his speech the other night at the Sports Personality was really good. That was because I've not really seen, I always thought of Tyson Fury as, how do I put it this nicely, a character, we'll put it that way. And I'd never really seen him do anything properly, like in an interview or anything like that. He's always just joking around, and especially just the way he carries himself in the ring, where doing those sort of comeback fights, and he was just toying with them. I know he does that anyway.
I hadn't watched him that much, and I watched that Wilder fight, and I couldn't believe the amount he was putting his arms down and kind of toying with him to hit him. I didn't know Fury was like that, but it was a spectacle in itself just watching someone do that.
So the point I was making was that, like, the guy who does that then comes out with that speech, that sports personality. I was like, okay, you know, actually, I've got a lot of respect for this. He's got some substance, and he's clearly recognised that this is a very good opportunity to get some really serious point across.
Yes.
And he did it with, like, a really good tone. And at the right level.
Yeah.
So, you know, that I think whilst the fight was very interesting and sort of metaphorically it speaks volumes, I think that the fact that it led to him doing that little speech at the sports personality was also kind of really good.
Yeah.
So
it shows the full span of Tyson Fury, because obviously in the post-match, or in the post-fight press conference, he was singing American Pie, and then he goes from that to giving a very serious speech at Sports Personality of the Year. But I also wanted to say about it that it's not only the fight itself wasn't only exciting in him getting off the floor, but it's also what it's potentially going to give us in the future. There's probably going to be another rematch between these two because it was a draw. And then there's this potential of an Anthony Joshua against Tyson Fury fight, which everyone wants to see. So, yeah, it's a moment just because of that and what it could give us in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of stepped up, even though I personally think from the last couple of years, because we have these world-beaten, world heavyweight champions, it's kind of pushed that level up now to it, like, the fact that it is the highest, it's the best division it's the most enjoyable division to watch at the moment. And it's only going to get better for the next year or so. I can't wait, really.
So somebody who's basically French when it comes to boxing, I don't know why I said basically French, that's such a weird... What? What am I doing? completely alien to it, essentially. Is heavyweight boxing going through a bit of a renaissance, like the last sort of decade of tennis?
Yeah.
You've got all these really good guys.
Yeah, particularly British heavyweight boxing. We hadn't seen anyone for absolutely ages to try and get to the top of the world again. And now we seem to be overflowing with British guys in and around there. So. Yeah, it's definitely peaked and got everyone's attention again.
Yeah, and I think to add to it as well, it was like, I don't think this personally was a bad thing, but we had Vladimir Klitschko as a champion for a long time, a long time. And don't get me wrong, he was one of the best boxers we've ever seen, but he was a very boring boxer in a sense that he would just jab you constantly and then pin you in and just win on points. I mean, he had the knockout punch, but when he was against the top champions, he never really had to show it. He just kept on getting the points. And I think we're at the point now where we've got people like Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua who have a one-punch knockout. And then we've got a character like Tyson Fury who is probably the best defensive world heavyweight in the league right now. Yeah. And he is the best, most enjoyable character to watch, especially when the build-up to a fight, I think it's only going to get better. And we have other people underneath who... are great fights to watch as well. We've got one coming up with Dylan White and Derek Chisora, which will be a very interesting fight to watch as well.
Yeah, you're right. It hasn't been as entertaining for a long time just because of the characters that we've now got in there. And also, I think, boxing suffered this for a long time, that they've split their titles so far with so many different divisions within it. It takes a lot for one fighter to unify it all, and we're now nearly at the point where we can see those fights where guys are starting to unify belts, and we can truly call them the world heavyweight champion,
which is very exciting.
Yeah,
that was a lot of boxing. Chris, go on.
So my next one was Rocky Clark. She is England's most capped, or she was England's most capped Test rugby player. She had a career spanning 15 years and 4 different World Cups, and she finally called it a day during this year's Six Nations back in February and March. Final game was against Ireland at the ripe old age of 37, and having made 137 international appearances, which surpassed the best male player in Jason Leonard's record of 114, which she passed way back in November 2016. She's a loose head prop, and she has continued actually playing for my club, Wasps, for the ladies team this season. And she's gone on and done lots of different media opportunities around off the back of it. And has been awarded an MBE for her services to rugby as well, off the back of her 2014 World Cup triumph with the women's rugby team. So yeah, she's someone that I've looked up to for a long time, and I think it's fantastic that this year she's finally managed to get some recognition now that she's called it a day, and everyone can look back on what a fantastic career she's had.
Well, let's not forget her greatest accolade yet, making it onto the list of Dugout Debate sporting heroes. You know, I think that's right at the top.
Definitely.
There. Stuffing number of caps is, that's the pinnacle of your sporting career. Yeah. No, a stellar sort of list of things there. And I can't really say much more. We've had a good discussion about Rocky already, yeah. I think. So, yeah, good moment. But she's still playing. So,
yeah.
But we'll probably feature her next year when she actually retires, or in 2025 when she actually retires. But yeah, it's impressive at 37 to be going. Kudos. Right, shall I do one? Let's go to the heavy heights of the long balmy summer that we had, all the way to Russia. And I'm not going to do the obvious one. We'll do that one later. This one is actually relating to the Germans. So after loss against Mexico and the dramatic late winner from Toni Kroos against Sweden, a victory for the inspiring Germany team in their final group game of Russia 2018 against South Korea would send them through. I actually listened to this, and I think, well, I'll make this point later about radio and commentary and how commentary can make moments, because I think I'm going to attempt to dub things in. It's going to be mental when I try this. I'm going to try and dub things in. If you don't hear anything, I failed. But this is where, you know, yeah, exactly. This is where commentary can really make things, and it's just in those dying moments. After South Korea had got that first one, and Neuer was playing in the final third of the South Korean half,
yeah,
and he loses it, and they just boot it up the field, and Son is like pegging it from beyond the halfway line to try and get this ball, and it's a race between him, the ball, and the touchline, and whether or not he'd get there. It's like go go go, and he just he slots it in, and the Germans are going home, and they were the number one ranked team going into the World Cup. It was just really funny. It was a really good goal. It was a really good way to finish it. The crowd went mental, obviously, because they went mental.
It's knocking out one of the favourites.
And exactly, exactly. And then you get all the different commentaries from the UK, from South Korea, and the Germans being like, oh no, this is just a really good example of the spectrum that commentary can give you if it's done well and done nicely, yeah. And how it can really contribute to moments. Like, because we've spoken about the 2003 Rugby World Cup, I remember the commentary from that,
yeah.
Things like when Kane scored that goal against Arsenal from the edge of the box,
the Aguero versus QPR,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Aguero,
Torres going around,
yeah. Yeah. I was exactly. Reliving Stevie Gerrard against Olympiacos, your beauty,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. But that was a really good moment. It was a very, very plucky win from South Korea then. So, yeah, I think that deservedly is sort of...
And I mean, definitely. As England fans, I don't think we can't complain about Germany losing in the World Cup.
Because yeah. Apologies to all the Germans out there.
Yes,
but yeah.
Very much apologies.
quite literally a case of schadenfreude. So, yeah. Right, Jack.
Yeah, I'll do my next one. It'd be a short and sweet one, but it was Europe's win against the USA in the Ryder Cup this year. USA arguably came into it as somewhat favourites because they were holding the Ryder Cup, and a lot of their golfers had actually had a brilliant year. Tiger Woods had actually just started coming back into competing at the top level, which was obviously great. I think what was great about this was the fact that obviously it was in France, but Europe coming back and actually kind of whitewashing USA pretty much. Bar one, I think it was the first morning of the tournament where the USA took a 3-1 lead, but that they came back and quite comfortably won 17.5 to 10.5. For me, what made this tournament so special was two things. Firstly, I think it was how special and how much this team got on with each other. They just seemed to be like best friends literally throughout the whole team, and the co-captains and everything as well, which was brilliant because it kind of brought us all together. But two in particular were very close, and I thought it was really enjoyable watching them play golf together, which was Molinari and Fleetwood, who had a massive bromance and probably still do. They ended up collecting 5 of Europe's 17.5 points on their own. I think Fleetwood was the only one who dropped points out of the two when he lost his singles match at the end of the last day. But other than that, they went unbeaten. Molinari was by far Europe's best golfer on the day. And personally, it's very enjoyable always beating the USA in golf because they are such a dominant force in it.
Yeah. Well, their bromance carried on at Sports Personality, didn't they? Yeah. When they gave him, what was it, international?
It was overseas.
Personality of the year. Yeah, overseas, that's what it is. Yeah. I do agree, like this year's Ryder Cup or this year's edition, the bromance made it a lot more fun, didn't it? Like, not just between those, but between all of them.
Yeah. And the social media effect with it. Did you ever see afterwards when it was Molinari and Fleetwood were in bed with the Ryder Cup in between them? And I just thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, that's good. There was a lot more sort of camaraderie, I think, on this edition of the Ryder Cup from the European guys, and it just made it a lot more fun to watch, didn't it? A lot of sort of good characters.
Completely.
Fun. Christopher, give us another one.
So my next one's a bit of a personal one for me because I was lucky enough to go to the home leg of Liverpool's Champions League semi-final against Roma, which was probably the best atmosphere I've ever been in, despite all of the problems actually that happened around the game with the Liverpool fan being hurt outside, and there was a bit of a, you could feel something in the air outside the ground, which was sad. But once you got inside, and the guys were all just in there so early and chanting from so early on, even before any of the players turned up, and there were flags going round and all sorts. It was absolutely fantastic, and it was a fair old while since I'd actually been to Anfield. Because of what I do, I can't get up on a weekend that regularly to go and see them. I was lucky enough to actually go to the Napoli game in the Champions League this season as well. The European nights just have something special to them, and that run last year really seemed like it was going to be Liverpool's year. Obviously it wasn't to be because of a certain Loris Karius in the end, but that's not a moment that's going to make this list. that run really, it felt like it was the old 2005 Istanbul spirit back in it, beating Manchester City, beating Roma as well on the way. And that was just, from a personal point of view, something that will stick with me for a long, long time, and definitely was one of my top moments during this year.
Yeah, for sure. Well, anyway, next on my list is Loris Karius rolling the ball to Benzema.
Only a Man United fan would say that. Surely a Spurs fan wouldn't care.
I don't know. I'm finding myself getting a bit annoyed with Liverpool fans because there are Liverpool fans everywhere in London. Literally everyone supports Liverpool. Because if I can't go to the game, I'll go and watch it in a pub somewhere. I usually tend to end up at the same 2 or 3. And, this is Southwark, and I will be the only Spurs fan in the whole place. I'm not in a Liverpool pub. I'm just a hostel pub or whatever, and everyone supports Liverpool. I'm like, guys, can you just go to Liverpool? Just do it up there.
I can confirm, I was surprised myself. I was in a London pub actually on the weekend watching the Manchester United Liverpool game, and I thought, well, it's going to be about 50-50 because you get a lot of Manchester United fans all over the country as well. But the cheers when Liverpool scored, it did seem like the majority of the pub was supporting Liverpool as well. So maybe London is being taken over by Liverpool fans.
Well, you say that, but then I watched the Man United Spurs game in a pub somewhere in I don't know, let's call it near Marylebone, in the FA Cup semi-final last year, and I was the only Spurs fan in there. So it might just be
lack
me,
of Spurs
only,
fans.
The only Spurs fan in London.
You just don't know enough Spurs fans.
Yeah,
you need to get them to congregate around you.
Yeah, I know, but. Yeah, it's a bit sad, isn't it?
So that's a plea to anyone listening. Please watch the Tottenham games with Timmy.
Yeah, just
pub.
Come,
if
just
you
come
support
with Tim.
Spurs, just
I
come.
I need somebody to hold my hand.
Arsenal Tottenham in the Carling Cup semi-final soon, or is it quarter-final? Tomorrow. I'd personally prefer if you all just support an Arsenal so that we can get the second win of the season against them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure either of those things are going to happen, Jack, to be honest. Anyway, we've digressed quite greatly.
Back to the moment.
I'd add, though, like, and this is for you, Chris, obviously, I do think Liverpool and Anfield are always very special, especially on European nights. They always do it very well.
Yeah.
So I can completely agree in terms of... I've never been there on my myself, but I can see it from the TV that it... The atmosphere is unbelievable.
I would say to anyone that supports any club just to go and experience it, because you don't have to be a Liverpool fan to actually take it all in and see what it's like. It's difficult getting tickets, admittedly, but just to say that you've been there once and seen what it's like, I genuinely would say anyone should go and try it.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to be an Arsenal fan to go and sit in the library, do you?
No comment.
Just leave that inside.
Just leave that there.
Yeah. Anyway, shall I do the England netball?
Go for it.
Yeah. Okay, so we all know about this, obviously, in the Commonwealth Games when the England girls defeated Australia in their own backyard, down under, having overturned a 4-point deficit in the final quarter to claim the Commonwealth gold. And this is when I was going to bring up the commentary thing, but... You guys must have heard it at Sports Personality when they were playing the footage at the end, and Caroline Barker is literally losing her verbal poop and her voice and everything at the end of that. And, you know, I've already made the point, but, like, that makes it better.
Yeah.
That ecstasy from that end of the mic 100% makes it better.
It just gives you shivers, doesn't it, when it's supposed to
be? It does, And you listen to things again and you're like, oh, I've got goosebumps again from remembering this. And it is the commentary more than what you're seeing.
Oh, it adds to it massively.
Yeah.
Massively.
Yeah. Yeah, it's evocative, isn't it? It
definitely is.
Yeah. Yeah, we spoke about in our end of year thing last year that you can feel it. You can feel sport, which is second.
It is.
There's nothing like anything close to it either. Like, being in a game, obviously, you still have that feeling, but... The fact that you're watching a game and you feel like you're going through those emotions as much as those players are in the game, I obviously you can get ups and downs from it, but I would never change it for anything.
Yeah,
it's why I don't really understand why people will flatly just say I don't like sport, like just
because you can feel it inside. It's doing something to your emotions, isn't it? If you're actually involved in watching it, I always think that those people kind of aren't watching it properly. Like they've got something. It's on in the background. They're doing something else. Really.
But you do need to invest a little bit to get stuff from it. That I granted, and football can be super boring.
Yes,
granted, and so can rugby. Everything is if you don't really understand it. But you know, you invest a little and you gain so much more.
You can be hurt if you invest yourself in it and your team's not doing great, but you're going to watch any game that your team's involved in, and it's going to be more interesting to you because you're supporting one of the teams in it.
I think it adds to it as well, is when if they are doing badly, when they do get to those good points, it's it makes it even more special.
You got to go through the bad times.
Part of the hurt is, exactly. Which is why American sport doesn't make any sense without relegation, because you don't really ever hurt that much. Like, oh, we came last. Oh, well, we're into next year.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It is true.
Yeah. Whereas Sunderland going down twice is both hilarious and
excruciating for them. Yeah,
excruciating for them, but they'll rise back up somewhere, presumably at some point, maybe.
Yeah.
But it is Sunderland.
It is Sunderland.
Well, that might be a topic for another one of our podcasts. I've been thinking more and more about how money dominates sport more and more all over the world, and it's a lack of money for Sunderland, isn't it, that's seen them plummet around the leagues.
And we see it in loads of sports as well.
All they need is a new investor, and suddenly they might be flying in the Premier League again. It's just...
It's a lack of money and very bad leadership. Yeah. And I think I was at somebody was doing like a leadership talk the other day, and they were saying at the moment leadership has got a very bad rep because we've got lots of really terrible leaders all around the world at the minute. I was like, yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah,
it's true. It's being underrated because people aren't really seeing good leaders anywhere. They've forgotten what it's like to have good leaders.
Yeah.
Also, the problem with good leaders is they don't need to brag about it.
No, that's true.
And they don't take it. Because
that's what makes them a good leader. Yeah.
Yeah.
Briefly.
Kind of depressing.
Yeah. Briefly, actually, going back onto the netball, I just wanted to mention that they did the same thing in the semi-final, actually, before they won the final. Yeah. I know at the moment, actually, is them slotting the the shot in the last minute to actually win it. But to do that in two games on the bounce to beat New Zealand and then Australia, I thought was actually worth a mention as well, that that was quite a journey, and to win a gold like that on that scene that they'd not actually won before.
Well, they also had some difficulty against Jamaica, didn't they?
They did.
So it was, you know, there was a lot of adversity in winning this medal. So it was good. Yeah, so they came back. It was Jamaica in the semi-finals, I think. Okay, Jack, your next one.
My next one for me personally was the biggest underdog story of 2018, and that was Naomi Osaka winning the US Open. So it's pretty. It was in the press for a lot of stuff. Obviously, most notably good and bad, but we don't really need to talk about the bad in it. But obviously, Naomi kind of shot into tennis very, very quickly. She is only 21 years old, so that is very, very young to actually win one of the majors. But to win the U.S. Open versus one of the best female tennis players or even tennis players to ever play the game in her home country was unbelievable. And the fact, obviously, I have added to the fact that there was other things happening, but for someone that was 21 years old to show the courage and nerve to hold on versus Serena, even when the game was paused for periods of time, and to hold on and still win against Serena, for me, was unbelievable. And it's pretty much why I think it's one of the it's one of the greatest underdog stories of this year. And it was very, very enjoyable to watch her celebrate and win, even with the
frivolity.
Yeah.
It is a shame, though, because I think it sort of got quite lost.
Yeah, I do as well.
In the whole spectrum of successes of the year, simply because what happened happened. So we're writing a lot of wrongs here, aren't we? We're making sure the narrative actually goes back to the person who it should do, rather than the interesting outburst that we had. You know, whilst you know the points that Serena was making, some of them were quite valid.
Yeah,
there's a time.
Yeah, and obviously this we're talking, and it is completely, it's the time, and I think I completely agree with you. And what I was saying was, like, we're talking about our top moments of the year, and obviously that part of it was not one of our favourites, and it's probably one of our least favourites points of the year, and that's why we're kind of highlighting that Naomi's success and win was unbelievable, and I don't think it should be forgotten about personally.
No, 100%. Yeah, it was an excellent achievement.
Yeah.
Anything to add, Chris, or were you just admiring the view?
No, I do. I completely agree with that, and we've already talked about Serena enough on this, so it's as you've both said, it's good that we've given the recognition to someone that was definitely overshadowed, and that's happened in lots of sports at lots of different times. The media will pick out a story that they think's the narrative that everyone wants to see, but really the narrative that we really wanted here was the fact that an underdog had gone and won, rather than the fall from grace of someone like Serena. But yeah, we can't always control what the media are going to put out there for us.
Yeah. Well, whenever you watch Match of the Day and somebody outside the top six beats anyone from within the top six, it's not, oh, look how well this team played.
Exactly.
It's, oh, look how bad this top six team was.
Which is a shame. You know,
it can be as minor as that to other more major stuff. But it's people like watching people fail.
Sadly, they do. It'd be nice if we looked at the positives rather than the negatives for people in those situations.
Yeah, but sometimes it's justified, like when Arsenal lose to Salah.
Oh, you wait, Tim. Oh, you wait.
No, it's fine. It's the day before the League Cup. So
I was about to say, the problem is, Tim, you haven't got nothing because
I have nothing. Oh, well, I do. We did beat you already this season, Tim, and you haven't beat us.
Yeah, you did, but you're still fifth.
Where, how's your stadium getting on?
Great, it'll be finished soon. Won't be a library.
No. Okay.
Anyway,
at least ours is the most.
Where are we at? How many of you guys got left? Chris,
I've got a couple left.
You've got a couple left.
I've got a couple left, and obviously we've got the big one.
Okay, Chris, you go then.
Sure. So the next two on my list actually are both from the Winter Olympics back at the start of the year.
I'll do them together then.
Yeah, I'll do both of them together then. And the first one of those is Lizzie Arnold managing to retain her skeleton title. Not only did we have that on that day, but we also had Laura Dees claiming the bronze in the same competition for it to be Great Britain's most successful ever day at a Winter Olympics. So I thought that was also worth a mention.
Can I just say, retaining your skeleton title sounds like a bloody good album.
It does, doesn't it? A very edgy, like, indie...
My skeleton title.
You've got a music career in there, Timmy.
Yeah, in heavy death metal or something, yeah. The white boy from Surrey revolutionised death metal with cheeky references to the Winter Olympics.
You found your niche market, mate.
Yeah.
So yeah, Yarnold, who was 29 when she won it, was the first Briton to retain a Winter Games title, and was also the first skeleton athlete to retain a title. So I thought that was incredible that she'd, out of all the people that had partaken in these skeleton events before, she was actually the first to ever retain it. It was kind of just taken as read that she was the first British athlete to retain her gold medal, but then to be the first in skeleton full stop. Was pretty impressive. And I also, we've spoken a lot about coming back from adversity and the value that we give that to some of these stories that we've already mentioned. I think it's worth mentioning about how difficult it was for her in the build-up. Obviously, 4 years is a long time in between, but a lot of those 4 years were spent being injured and not being able to do anything. And she actually, after she won it, said that she felt really lucky just to actually be taking part, let alone being able to retain her title. So yeah.
Well, she was talking about sports personality, wasn't yeah. she? About not possibly just not going to go and do the race.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, so for her to go and go from that point where she doesn't know whether she can compete to actually going to win the thing again, yeah, definitely makes it one of my moments of the year. The other one from the Winter Olympics that I had was slightly more crazy, shall we say, finish to it. It was an event that I wouldn't actually normally watch. It was the two-man bobsleigh final, and as you do whenever an Olympics is on, you find yourself watching sports that you'd never actually normally watch, but you know it's the Olympics, so I'm just going to watch it anyway. And I was royally treated to what can only be described as one of the best finishes to a bobsleigh final ever, yeah. Which ended with Canada and Germany sharing the two-man bobsleigh Winter Olympic gold medal. After four runs, they had exactly the same time of 3 minutes, 16.86 seconds, which is just crazy to think that out of all the things that could have possibly happened, you're going to have two teams tied for gold after four runs. After one, maybe you could think, yeah, that could happen. But after four runs, no way. And that's the first time that the Olympic title had been shared in 20 years. So it was... I was surprised, in fact, that it had been shared at all before, given quite the scale of events that had to lead up to that happening. But the guys were, as you'd expect going into it, it was a topsy-turvy over the different rides that went down, with Canada leading Germany by 0.06 seconds, which was the in the first race, and then which got them to the top of the leaderboard, and then the Canadian sled then finished 0.06 seconds slower than the German counterparts, obviously on the final run, to even it back up. So yeah, it was absolutely crazy, and I couldn't quite believe what was happening before my eyes. Going back to our commentary point, the commentators were pretty much giving the medal already to the Canadians. They'd thought that they'd done enough, and then as they were going around each corner, the Germans were slowly picking up more and more speed, and the time between the two sleds was going down and down, but at no point were they matching until the very last bit as it went over the line. So yeah, it was absolutely incredible to watch, and definitely one of my moments of the year.
I don't know how I managed to think this, but I was actually thinking about the 2017 Lions tour for this list.
Yes,
it shows you I was on the ball when I was doing the research. Oh, that was last year. Oh my god, I've done so much in the interim. I'll talk about the commentary. Remember that tie and just being like, everyone was just like sort of, oh
yeah, is this it?
It was exactly like that on the bobsleigh, because the athletes didn't know what to do. Like, they didn't know what to celebrate. Yeah. They were like hugging each other, but at the same time, they were disappointed that they didn't have the gold just for themselves, not that they had to share it. So it was really odd.
I don't know how I'd feel.
I mean, I can't compare this to anything, but there was one time I was playing rugby and we were in our county championship and we were drawing, and it literally went down to the fact that we lost on a flip of a coin because they couldn't do it.
Oh my God.
And the next year we got to the final again and we were drawing against the same team, and the parents basically agreed between the two teams that they can't do that to their kids again, and we agreed to share the title. I mean, I'm not comparing it to anything. We do it every year, the county championship, but we got to the final against the same team 2 years in a row. And drew in both finals, and obviously lost one of them because of the toss of a coin. So obviously I can't compare it, but it's horrible.
You can tell that that one still hurts him, mate. That's come completely straight back up.
Yep. Never gonna forget that moment.
Yeah. No, I as you can imagine, the Germans, the ones that had made up the time, were the ones that were wildly celebrating because they thought that they'd had silver before the run. Whereas the Canadians were the kind of more disappointed ones because they thought they had gold in the bag until the Germans pulled it out right at the last second. But yeah, just those contrasting emotions, it was incredible to watch. And you were sat there thinking, well, if someone wrote this, you wouldn't believe what they'd written.
No. How many spare medals do you reckon they make?
They must have had a fair few. Can you imagine?
I mean, it's only two more gold medals, but you know.
Yeah.
They've got to make.
You know what's coming, and that you can't really have draws in that many of them. Granted, like things like, I don't know, judo, where you have repechages and two bronze medals and that sort of thing. Yeah, you need a few more bronzes, but you'd never need to make more golds, would you?
And what do you suppose they do with the silvers that didn't get given out?
What happens to the spare medals that they have actually made? Like, I will happily take one.
Yeah, it's just a medal maker that's at home like, oh, well, I've won five gold medals.
Yeah. Why not?
Exactly. I'm the best medal maker in the world.
I take them out on nights out.
Gold medals!
Two chains. Well, this has got really weird off topic. Jack, give us yours.
Cool, so my next one was Alistair Cook. For his last ever century, in his last ever test match against India. Ali Kirk, or Chef, which was he's most notably known as by the cricketing fans. He hadn't been having a great year, even though he is England's leading test run scorer. He'd actually not been having a good couple of years, and it somewhat came to a surprise and somewhat didn't come to a surprise that he had decided to hang up his boots or trainers for this last test, after this last test against India. But boy did he shine, and he came out flying and scored 147 runs against them. I personally think it's really quite special because of the fact that he is England's best run scorer, arguably one of England's best ever cricketers, and to do it on his last game against India, who are one of the best cricketing nations, or the best cricketing nation, depending on what you believe, and do it against them when they are, I think they were the number one test team in the world at the point.
Yeah, they were.
Was unbelievable, and to top it off, they actually won the series 4-1, which was in the end very comfortable. I absolutely thought it was brilliant. But I think my favourite point of that whole weekend, that whole 5 days, was when the fans and the players knew it was Alistair Cook's last game, the amount that they both recognised, both the players and the fans, of how special Alistair Cook was, and the amount of support and celebrations that he got when he was coming off for the day, or when he did get out, or anything. And I personally think the most special part was when the Indian players came over to celebrate when they got him out. They weren't celebrating getting him out, but celebrating his success on the pitch.
Yeah, well,
nah, legend.
Not many sports stars get to do that, do they? Having already announced that you're going to retire after a said game, and then be able to go out at the top like that.
It's
so
a dream.
Yeah, so many sports stars just don't have that fairy tale ending written for them, and it's fantastic that he managed to get that. And actually, it's apt that we're talking about it on today, because it's being rumoured that he's going to be given a knighthood and the New Year's Honours list, which is
totally honoured as well.
Yeah, totally deserved. So fantastic for Alistair Cook.
What, you have one more, Jack?
I do have one more, yeah. My own personal last one was, it's Ireland's 2018 rugby season. But for me, there was two major moments of the year that they had. And obviously, this is not underlying the fact that they had arguably the best year in rugby out of all the nations, and in fact, probably their best year ever in rugby. They only lost one time, which was in Australia. But the year started off when they won the Grand Slam in the Six Nations. And the one of the main moments that they had in that period was Johnny Sexton scoring a drop goal against France on the 83rd minute. So 3 minutes of added time, even if they have it. He scores a drop goal from 35 metres out. And I remember where I was in Italy at the time and watching it live from my computer. I could not believe what I was seeing. And the reaction from the players and the fans, it was ridiculous. But to obviously top it off, they did win the Grand Slam, which is not an easy feat to do. But they continued throughout the year. They went to Australia in the summer and won the series that they had over there 2-1, which was brilliant. But the second main moment that they had for me personally was beating the best nation in the world in New Zealand, 16-9. And I think the most special part of it was Jacob Stockdale's try, where he chipped over the defence and collected it and scored, which pretty much won them the game. The scariest part of it was the fact that he tried to do a chip about 5 minutes earlier on in the game and got charged down, and New Zealand nearly went on and scored, but he still had the courage to do it again and win the game for them, which I thought was really special.
Yeah, that was down on my list as well, actually, Ireland beating the All Blacks. They were absolutely fantastic, and I've been lucky enough to go with the Wasps and watch basically the Ireland team when we played Leinster, and they are just a force of nature at the moment. And if you are an Irish rugby fan, like, you've got to think that this is your golden moment and savour every moment of it. That we could be talking about next year in this exact same podcast. We could be talking about them winning the World Cup. Just to be even in that kind of race at this point is absolutely fantastic for a nation like Ireland. And just another honorary mention to how close England got to being on this list. They were one Sam Underhill try away from being on this list against the All Blacks.
My God, would it have been special?
Exactly. They'd have made all our lists pretty much at the top, I think, if they managed to do that. But all credit
still
to
Ireland. Still love the side set. Yeah.
All credit to Ireland. They actually managed to do it.
Yeah. England will be devastated they didn't make it on our list.
That's the worst part of their year.
Yeah, exactly. Right, let's round this off with what I think everyone in this country can agree was probably the best moment of the summer and the year. I don't know. Is it? It's my number one.
Yeah, it's my number one.
So this was obviously the penalty shootout against Colombia in Russia 2018, where Dyer slotted home after Pickford did those two. Was it two saves?
Yeah,
he definitely did one miraculous save. But did he save twice? Or was it missed?
I think he saved two. Yeah,
he saved two.
Yeah.
Well, especially the second save against Carlos Bacca. Yeah. That was absolutely outrageous.
And the celebration after.
How can he make your wrist that stiff? You know, because Bacca smacked.
Yeah.
And he just stuck his arm up, sort of what perpendicular to where he was, and just his arm didn't move. The ball basically burst as it came out, and then Dyer put it home, and it was the reason why it's the Dyer penalty rather than Pickford save for me is that it was a really, really rubbish penalty, and the keeper got a really fat hand to it, but it went in.
Yeah.
I was like, if we can do that, then maybe we can win it. You know, if we can get through with a really ropey penalty, maybe our luck has changed.
It was,
and we could win it.
It was just the fact that we'd finally won a penalty shootout. It's going back
to relief.
This English thing. We were celebrating the Germans going out, but we'd actually won a penalty shootout. At that point, I'm not sure we'd got giddy enough. I mean, we're all singing It's Coming Home, but I'm not sure we'd got giddy enough to actually think we had a possibility of it coming home. But that kind of started the fever pitch going to a whole new level. That
it did. Well, it was because we knew Sweden were up next.
Yeah.
And I wasn't fussed about the Sweden game. I watched it. I actually watched it with you, didn't I, Chris?
Yeah.
And you know, it was great, but we were meant to win. We should have won, and we did. Whereas Colombia are notoriously a tricky opponent in the World Cup. They've done well over the last few iterations.
When we conceded late like that as well, like everyone thought it was written on the wall that it was going to be typical England. Oh, we conceded late and then we're going to lose on penalties and go out.
Well, and when Hendo
makes this is what I mean. I think the ups and downs in that game even makes it more special, is because we were literally that close to winning in normal time, having to then go to penalties, then going down in penalties and still coming back and winning. It just makes it even more special.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And I think we're about to allude to it anyway. When Trippier scored that free kick against Croatia in the semi-final after 5 minutes, you're like, what? What's happening
at that moment? It was coming home.
It was coming home indeed.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely coming home. It was a great summer.
I think what made it special was I was fortunate enough to watch it with a group of guys that I worked with. We were in one of the pubs, but the celebrations that you saw across the country, it actually brought people together, which was unbelievable. And you hear it from the players as well. Was the fact that they were enjoying it so much because they were getting the videos back of everyone in the country just. Riding this wave with them and absolutely loving it as much as they were.
It felt like we had the Olympic spirit back, didn't it? We'd had completely. In 2012, and it never really we never thought that that was going to come from the England football team again, because everyone had kind of given up hope before the tournament that we were going to be able to do anything.
Very well managed by Southgate. I think I know he's had accolades from it, but his contribution to that whole
he did it so well.
It was him. He was the architect of it, being so open with the media and making sure the players were the same and just being like we're normal guys. We're just playing a bit of football. Come chat to us.
I think one of the things that I loved the most was when we find out that the press are playing darts against the players, and none of the press can beat the players. Or was it? I think it was John Stones. I may be wrong there. It was just unbeatable out of everyone else. Yeah. It was like, that is absolutely brilliant.
He is from Barnsley, of course he's going to be good at darts.
Yeah, of course.
It's a valid point, though. Like, when you're a professional athlete, you've got a lot of time to kill, haven't you?
Yeah.
And you can't be doing dangerous stuff. So you would probably get really good at, like, pool, darts,
table tennis,
all that sort of stuff, you know, because you've got to kill that time. Yeah, you don't want to exert too much, so you may as well.
I was also just thinking that it kind of shows how success-starved we are. That we made it to the semi-finals, and can you imagine the German reaction to that? They'd be like, we failed, we didn't actually go and win the thing. But
exactly.
But England are celebrating the fact that we managed to finally get to the semi-final, and it shows that we've been lacking anything to celebrate for so long that we finally have something that we can hold on to. And I think we all will remember that World Cup.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, not only for England's success, but for what a good World Cup it was as well.
Yeah, it was cracking, wasn't it? Yeah, it was cracking. The other thing that was great about this summer was, you know, the last couple of years the world has been quite a strange place, but for a month and a bit we just totally forgot about that.
And we were all together about,
you know, some boy from Chingford who won the Golden Boot, and, you know, a guy from Barnsley being the best centre back in the world and all this sort of stuff. And just like, it actually bring lots of people together just to have a bit of fun.
That's pretty special.
And who, get it over who thought that had happened in Vladimir Putin's back garden, eh?
Yeah,
I know.
And they held a brilliant World Cup.
It's orchestrated. Anyway, that was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a
Chris,
really
is that is that your number one as well? Or is that that's your moment of the year? That can't be one.
Yeah, that was up there. I kind of had, when I wrote my list, I had a tie between that and the England netball. Because my girlfriend watched the netball right to the end and kind of told me about it and said, "Well, you really got to watch this." So I was all over that when
strong.
It was happening.
Yeah, strong.
Yeah, so both of those two, and national success was definitely the top for this year.
Yeah, it's a good commitment because it was quite late, wasn't it?
I think by then it might have even been early morning that when they were actually.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, whatever. Late early morning.
Yeah, they all blend into one.
Yeah, exactly. Some bleary-eyed 5 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I have to admit, it's not the first time I've done that for sport, but that's why we love sport.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the American football being one.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was fun. That was nice. I like this. This is now a tradition I've decided.
Yes. I think it's a good idea as well.
I think it's a really good idea. Yeah,
it's nice. Just round up the
year. Get to reminisce.
I enjoyed last year's. And we'll probably do another one like you know, best moments ever.
Yeah.
But give it 15 years.
I was going to say, give it. Forward, we'll do a one every decade. To that.
Well, I was thinking 2033. But if you want to bring it to 2027, then go for it. But yeah, let's do it. Anyway, cheers, guys. Have a good Christmas.
Thank you very much. You too.
All right, and enjoy the festive sport.
Indeed. And Merry Christmas all right. to all our listeners.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Do all the Facebook and Twitter things, people. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.